This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Radio Reading Sports. I'm Steve Ledwin, and for the next half hour, I'll be bringing you sports straight from the Cincinnati Enquirer. We'll follow, or we'll take a look, rather, at what's on the air locally and all the upcoming events, and then after that, we'll start on page one of the sports page and get through what we can. But what's upcoming for local teams? Well, FC Cincinnati is in action Saturday on the road in a big rivalry game against the Columbus Crew. That's a 7:45 start as part of the what they refer to as the Hell is Real series. May 15th, FC will be back home against Atlanta. That's a 7:30 start at TQL Stadium. And then May 18th, a home game again against St. Louis, also at 7:30. Well, the Reds still trying to break out of this seven-game losing streak. They have a game today. It's a 1-10 start versus the Diamondbacks down at Great American Ballpark. And then Friday, they hit the road, and it's a long road trip, but it starts in San Francisco. That's a 10:15 p.m. start our time on Friday evening. And then Saturday, 7:15 p.m. start. Well, here's what's on the air locally. There's golf to be seen if you turn on the golf channel all day today. Starting at 9:30 a.m., we've got PGA Tour action. It's the 2024 Myrtle Beach Classic. And then at 11:30, it's the Regions Traditions, 2024 Regions Traditions Tournament. That's at 11:30, as I mentioned. And then at 2 p.m., also on the Golf Channel, it's more PGA Tour action, the 2024 Wells Fargo Championship. If you're into horse racing, turn on FS2 at 1 p.m. to catch America's Day at the Races. There's Major League Baseball on television. Of course, Seattle visits Minnesota. That's a 1 o'clock start on the Major League Baseball Network. And then you can catch the Reds. The Diamondbacks trying to sweep the series. It's a 1:10 start on either Bally Sports Ohio, that's the television side, or Radio Side 700 WLWAM. At 5 p.m., the Houston Astros visit the New York Yankees. That's on the Major League Baseball Network. And then at 9:30 this evening on Fox Sports 1, it's Kansas City at Los Angeles. We have NBA basketball playoff action. It's the Eastern Conference playoffs as Cleveland visits Boston and they continue their series. That's a 7 p.m. tip-off on ESPN, followed at 9:30. Also on ESPN, it's the Western Conference playoffs as Dallas is at Oklahoma City. NHL hockey Eastern Conference playoff, the New York Rangers at Carolina. That's a 7 p.m. start on TNT. Followed by the Western Conference playoff, it's Colorado at Dallas at 9:30 p.m., also on TNT. Soccer, it's the UEFA Europa League soccer. It's Roma at Bayer Leverkusen. That's a 3 p.m. start on the CBS Sports Network. And then if you'd like to catch some tennis, you had to get up early. It was the 2024 Italian Open, televised at 5 a.m. and 6 a.m., on the Tennis Channel. Well, let's start with the front page of the Cincinnati Enquirer. The top headline is about Joe Burrow, and it's written by Kelsey Conway, and it says, Burrow gives opinion on 18 games and 2 byes. Well, it appears 18 regular season NFL games could be on the horizon, and Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow has some thoughts on it. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell recently said in an interview with Pat McAfee that he hopes to replace one of the 3 current preseason games with 1 regular season game. Right now, NFL teams play 17 regular season games with 1 bye week. The reporter asked Burrow his thoughts on an 18-game season Tuesday. Well, the quarterback had posted 18 games, 2 bye weeks on X, formerly known as Twitter, after hearing Goodell's comments April 26th. Burrow says, that's definitely something that we've thought about. 18 games is definitely a big ask. That's not easy, adding that extra game. Obviously, it would be great for revenue, but I feel like adding that bye week if you're going to have the 18-game schedule is pretty critical for our bodies. If you keep that first bye week, and some teams have the bye week in week 5, 6, and then you're going 12 or 13 games in a row, that's not easy. Probably a Thursday night game thrown in there too, so that's never easy. Those two byes are pretty critical. Burrow has a suggestion if the NFL decides to add another regular season game to the schedule. Maybe you could do something like the first bye is kind of how we have it now, and the second bye, everybody has it at once, and you make it like the Pro Bowl week or something like the All-Star week for the NBA. I don't know, he said. People are paid a lot of money to have those discussions and make those decisions, but we'll see how it plays out. Well, here's an article by Jason Williams and Gordon Wittenmeyer. They always go back and forth in a column every week, and this week they discuss how aggressively the Reds should pursue early trades. Well, Wittenmeyer says, never thought I'd say this, but 6 weeks into the season, it might be time for the Reds lineup to find a rally sausage. Williams says, huh? Wittenmeyer says, you know, like the Minnesota Twins dude brought a summer sausage to the dugout, and those guys started rubbing the sausage and won 12 straight games. Williams says, the Reds don't need a gimmick. They just need to be able to rub two hits together once in a while. Wittenmeyer responds, that's what I mean. It's been a really quiet month for the Bats. By the time they got done losing to the Orioles on Sunday, they were the worst hitting team in the majors at 210, even worse than the crappy White Sox. Williams responds, good thing TJ Friedl came back Tuesday. And Wittenmeyer said, they need a lot more than that. Williams, that's one thing we agree on. That's not enough. What the Reds needed was to trade for two-time batting champion Luis Arraez instead of letting him go to San Diego when Miami made him available last weekend. It looked like the Reds and most of baseball got surprised that a player like that was available this early in the season. Wittenmeyer, well, it's obviously rare for any trade of significance to happen this early, but Reds president Nick Kroll didn't get caught flat-footed. He told me over the weekend he's been making calls too, but hasn't found a match yet. Williams said, well, how is Arias not a match for what the Reds need? A match, that ought to, isn't that something you use to light a fire under these guys? Wittenmeyer says, well, let's see what kind of difference Friedl makes at the top of the lineup. Besides, even if the trade market is starting sooner this year, who do you want them to go get right now? Williams responds, what about a guy like Luis Rengifo of the Angels? He's having a good year at the plate. He gets on base. He steals bases. He can play a bunch of positions. He's even a switch hitter. He has one more year of club control, so you're not looking at a rental player. Sounds like a Reds kind of guy. Wittenmeyer responds, he might be a good fit if the Angels are selling yet, if the price is right, and if you've got a place for him to play when this lineup is back to full strength. Williams, well, I wouldn't count on this lineup being at full strength this season. Wittenmeyer, Noel V. Marte is coming back from his steroid suspension on June 27th. Williams, that's what I'm talking about. You're going to count on a guy who let his team down by getting busted? A guy who's only got 6 weeks of experience in the big leagues? Wittenmeyer says, okay, how about Matt McClain, their best player last year? Team officials expect him back from his shoulder injury right after the trade deadline in August. Williams, do you really believe McClain is going to be back this year? That was a major surgery. Hard to count on what you're going to get from him, even if he does come back. Wittenmeyer says, well, they should at least have a better idea of that by July, and they can address that in the trade market at that point if they need to. And Williams says, well, it might be a little too late. If trades are going to start happening early this year, the Reds need to be a part of that now. Whitmire responds, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think they should take a little more time for the market to show itself. There also have been a lot of extenuating circumstances, including a revolving door of flu bug absences. That created this mess. It's hard to know exactly how good this lineup is right now. And William says, well, if they don't already know, then they're going to find out real quick with 7 games coming up against the Dodgers in the next couple of weeks. And Whitmire says the last line here, yikes, maybe it's time to talk to the Twins about borrowing their magic sausage. By the way, Tuesday, the Reds had a game with the Diamondbacks. That was the first of this 3-game set. And Charlie Goldsmith reports, for the first time all year, the Cincinnati Reds lineup looked close to normal again. After the Reds activated center fielder T.J. Friedl from the injured list on Tuesday and slotted him back in the leadoff spot, the Reds filled every spot in the lineup with a player who was projected to be a regular at the start of spring training. They're still missing the injured Matt McClain and the suspended Noelvi Marte, but the lineup looked like a good one with Friedl back in a familiar role. But on Tuesday, the Arizona Diamondbacks beat the Reds 6-2, handing them their 6th consecutive loss, making them a season-low 3 games under 500 at 16 wins and 19 losses. The Reds enter Wednesday's game 5 games behind NL Central leaders Chicago and Milwaukee. Diamondbacks ace Zach Gallen shut down the Reds with 6 scoreless innings, continuing a terrible run for the Reds lineup. Friedl didn't solve the Reds' woes on offense, but he provides a boost in the middle of a daunting stretch in their schedule. I'm just going to go out there and play my game and do what I do, Friedl said. The worst thing you can do is put pressure on yourself, especially in this game, a game of failures. For me, I'm happy to be back with these guys in the clubhouse and be back on this team. I'll do whatever I can on the field to make an impact, and the rest will take care of itself. Well, before the game, Friedl addressed the elephant in the room, the Reds reeling entering Tuesday with the second-to-worst batting average in Major League Baseball, and they had scored only 4 runs total in their previous 4 games. And they didn't score against any of the Orioles' 3 starters in the 3-game sweep at the hands of Baltimore. Friedl was the Reds' most valuable player last season, according to the wins above replacement metric, but he knows that one player can't fix an offense. This game is already hard enough, Friedl said. If you put any pressure on top of that, it'll make it more difficult. For me, I'm just going to do what I do and play my role. In 2024, the Reds strike out too much. Aside from Ellie De La Cruz, young hitters haven't taken significant steps forward. A few, including Christian Encarnacion Strand and Will Benson, look like they've taken a step back. And veteran addition Jameer Candelario hasn't provided the consistent approach that the Reds expected. As the offense has struggled over the last few weeks, the Reds have desperately needed a boost. Friedl returned on Tuesday as a candidate to fill that role. He's a spark plug, Reds second baseman Jonathan India said. He steals bags, he gets on base, he does everything for us. It's amazing to have him back in the lineup. Friedl, who fractured his wrist when he dove for a ball in spring training, only needed 4 rehab games in AAA before he returned to the big league roster. When he had a brace on his wrist in early April, he did conditioning drills with the Reds and the rest of the team to stay in shape. He also kept throwing, asking a coach to catch the ball for him when it got thrown back his way. Then he went to the Reds spring training complex in Arizona, where Friedl added tracking fly balls into his routine. When he was cleared to swing the bat, he felt like he quickly found his timing. On his rehab assignment, Friedl hit the ground running and completed his quick return to the big leagues. TJ does a lot of things on the field well, Reds manager David Bell said. He just has to do that. It all matters. It all contributes. We've got 26 guys who are going to contribute. TJ is a big part of our team. He knows exactly who he is. Against the Diamondbacks on Tuesday, the Reds only tallied one hit against Gallen. Reds starting pitcher Frankie Montas dialed up his velocity to the highest that it's been in 2 years, and he allowed one earned run plus one earned run in six innings. But right before the Reds got the chance to take advantage of a shaky Diamondbacks bullpen in the bottom of the seventh, Reds reliever Justin Wilson allowed four runs as the Diamondbacks took a 6-0 lead. The vibes are still high, Friedel said. Through the sickness and the injuries and everything that has happened so far, everyone I talk to on this team, they're feeling good. It's still May 7th. There's a long season ahead. Well, if you're into hockey, you'll enjoy this article breaking down the NHL draft lottery. Mike Brame reports out of USA Today. Well, the San Jose Sharks landed the first pick in the NFL draft. That was during Tuesday night's lottery, and the right to select Boston University standout Macklin Celebrini in June. The Sharks finished last overall and had 18.5% odds to win the pick. They will select first for the first time in franchise history. The Chicago Blackhawks, last year's lottery winner, will get the second pick, as no team moved up in the lottery. Celebrini, who is 17 years old, he's a 6-foot, 190-pound freshman center, had 32 goals and 32 assists in 38 games to lead the Terriers to the Frozen Four, where they lost to eventual champion Denver in the semifinals. He won the Hobey Baker Award as college hockey's top men's player, plus was voted hockey's East top player and rookie. Well, here are the winners in the draft lottery. The San Jose Sharks, of course. Celebrini isn't Connor Bedard, but he's a high-end, skilled offensive player whom the Sharks can build around. A nice reward for a historically bad season. Sharks general manager Mike Greer, a former Boston University standout, will get to draft a fellow Terrier with the top pick. And with the Penguins not winning one of the top two picks, the Sharks get Pittsburgh's first-round pick and 14th overall. Well, Macklin Celebrini's parents, his father Rick, works up the road as the Golden State Warriors Vice President of Player Health and Performance, and another son, Aiden, is a Vancouver Canucks prospect. Everyone stays on the West Coast. Also, more winners was the NHL draft. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman made it official that the draft will be held at the Sphere in Las Vegas. The high-tech venue should make for an impressive night. Well, who were the losers? Well, the losers were, I guess, the lack of drama. No team moved up or down, unlike last year when the Blackhawks moved up two spots. The last team has landed, and the top pick in three of the last four drafts. Also, the Chicago Blackhawks were losers. If they had moved up for a second consecutive year, Bedard and Celebrini down the road would have made a good 1-2 punch, like the team once had with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. Well, there's no clear-cut number two prospect, but the Blackhawks will get an elite player regardless. And the last loser is Zillow. When ESPN announcer John Bushkiros asked Celebrini if he had been on the real estate site Zillow to see where he might live, the prospect responded, "Wait, what's Zillow?" Couple of lottery notes. Who are the top NHL draft prospects? Well, Celebrini is the consensus number one pick, and has been all season. He possesses that rare elite ability to thrive with his skills and smarts while competing with a consistent passion to face every challenge head-on and generate results, all the while making himself a better player, said Dan Marr, vice president of NHL Central Scouting. There is no consensus number two pick. The draft is deep in defensemen. Here is how NHL Central Scouting ranks the top 10 North American prospects and five international prospects. First, Boston University center Macklin Celebrini, and then Michigan State defenseman Artyom Levnashinov, and then Medicine Hat center Caden Lindstrom, Denver defenseman Zeev Bjum, Saginaw defenseman Zach Perrick, Tri-City winger Trevor Connolly, London defenseman Sam Dickinson, Spokane center Berkeley Catton, and Kelowna center Tiege Inya. That's the son of Hall of Famer Jerome Inya and center, or rather, and also Chicago center Michael Hage. Well, the international prospects, and excuse my pronunciation here, but Russian 6'7 defenseman Anton Siliev, Russian winger Ivan Demidov, Finnish center Konsta Helenius, Czech defenseman Adam Jiricek, and Swedish winger Michael Brandt is Exenyard. And when and where is the NHL draft? The NHL draft will be June 28th and 29th at the Sphere in Las Vegas. And how does the lottery work? Well, there are two drawings. First, for a chance at the top pick, and then for a chance at the second pick. Winning teams can move up only 10 spots. The last place team can draft no lower than third overall. In beginning with the 2022 lottery, a team cannot win more than twice in a five-year period. There are 14 ping pong balls in the machine, and each team is assigned a series of four numbers. The lower a team is in the standings, the more series of numbers it gets. Well, the Sharks won with the combination of 2, 7, 10, and 11, while the Blackhawks got the second pick with a combination of 3, 6, 11, and 14. Well, by the way, for the fourth time in his career, Minnesota Timberwolves center Rudy Gobert stands alone among the NBA's defensive elite. And now he joins an exclusive list. Gobert edged out San Antonio Spurs rookie phenom Victor Wembanyama and Miami Heat center forward Ben Adebayo on Tuesday night to win the 2023-2024 Hakeem Olajuwon Trophy. That's awarded to the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. This marks the fourth time Gobert, who is 31, has won the award, putting him in a three-way tie for most all-time. He joins Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame big men Ben Wallace and Dikembe Mutombo. The award was announced Tuesday night during the TNT pregame broadcast ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers-Boston Celtics Conference semifinal game. Gobert has continued to anchor the defense for Minnesota, which improved this season to 56-26 in the number 3 seed in the Western Conference. With his 7-foot-1-inch frame, length, and lateral quickness, Gobert is a dominant rim protector who routinely forces offensive players to adjust their shots inside the paint. In 76 games this season, Gobert averaged 12.9 rebounds and 2.1 blocks per game, while adding 14 points per game. The Timberwolves led the NBA this season in defensive rating at 108.4 and ranked second in opponent points in the paint, allowing just 46.1 per game. After dispatching the Suns in a four-game sweep in the first round of the playoffs, the Timberwolves have stunned the defending champion Nuggets by taking a 2-0 lead in their conference semifinal series. Gobert missed Monday night's game in Denver over the birth of his child, but is expected to return Friday for Game 3. Wembanyama, who is 20, was trying to become the first rookie in NBA history to win the league's Defensive Player of the Year award, though his future prospects are bright. Despite playing just 29.7 minutes per game this season, he led the league in blocks with 254, and the next closest player, Oklahoma City's Chet Holmgren, recorded 64 fewer. In fact, when the factoring steals and blocks, Wembanyama, who has 342, was again unmatched. By comparison, the next closest player in steals and blocks combined was Los Angeles Lakers forward center Anthony Davis with 269, while Gobert ranked 7th with 214. Adebayo, who is 26, is a versatile defender who can guard all five positions on the floor, though he was not as statistically proficient as Gobert and Wembanyama. Gobert finished with 433 total points in the voting for the award, while Wembanyama with 245 and Adebayo with 91, Davis with 83. The New Orleans Pelicans' Herbert Jones and Boston Celtics' Drew Holiday also received votes. Gobert received 72 of a possible 99 first-place votes. Wembanyama received 19 first-place votes. Well, here's some Sports Digest notes. Saying the process became pretty complicated and pretty messy, Rory McIlroy revealed Wednesday morning that he won't be rejoining the PGA Tour Policy Board after all. It was initially reported last month that Webb Simpson submitted his resignation as a player director with an explicit request that McIlroy fill his seat. Well, McIlroy himself had stepped away from the board last November but showed a desire to return. Well, McIlroy's return, however, was subject to a vote, and it was unclear whether that vote was actually held, but the Northern Irishman admitted he was met with resistance by some on the board. It got pretty complicated and pretty messy, and I think the way it happened, I think it opened up some old wounds and scar tissues from things that have happened before, McIlroy told reporters in Charlotte, North Carolina, the day before the Wells Fargo Championship begins. Also, Candace Parker was named Adidas' new president of women's basketball on Wednesday. The longtime WNBA star retired from her playing career last week after 16 years in the league. In 2010, Parker became the first woman to have a signature basketball shoe with Adidas, the Ace Commander. Let's take a quick scan of Major League Baseball standings. Baltimore leads the American League East. Actually, they're tied with the Yankees, 23-12 and 24-13, so they're percentage points ahead. They're followed by Boston, Tampa Bay, and Toronto. They're 4.5, 5, and 7.5 games out, respectively. In the Central Division, the Cleveland Indians have a 23-13 lead. That's good enough for a 2.5 game lead over Minnesota and Kansas City, followed then by Detroit and the Chicago White Sox. In the West Division, Texas at 21-16 has a half-game lead over Seattle, a four-game lead over Houston. The LA Angels are 7.5 out, and Houston is 8 games behind. In the National League Division, the Philadelphia Phillies lead the Eastern Division. They're 26-11. That's baseball's best record. Atlanta then comes in at 21-12. They're 3 games behind. Washington, 7 games back. The Mets are 7.5 out, and Miami is 16.5 games behind. In the West, the LA Dodgers are 25-13. They have a 6.5 game lead over San Diego. They lead Arizona by 8, San Francisco by 8.5, and Colorado by 15.5. And finally, the Reds division, the Central. The Milwaukee Brewers are 21-14. They are percentage points ahead of the Chicago Cubs, who are 22-15. Pittsburgh then comes in at 17-20. They're 5 games out. The Reds are 16-20, 5.5 out. And St. Louis is 15-21, 6.5 games behind. That'll wrap up sports for this Thursday. Thanks for listening, everyone.